Hello and welcome back to Illumination, the Disney Lorcana podcast. My name is Max.
And I'm Sam.
And we are here today, episode 22 of the podcast, talking about Azurite Sea. I mean, what else are we going to be talking about? Come on. We're talking not about specific cards. We're going to do our set review. So if you're familiar with the podcast, you know we live stream our set review. So you better get over there and check it out. It's twitch.tv/supraliminalfilms. We are a part of the Supraliminal Entertainment Group. So that's where you can find us over on our Twitch channel. I'm sure if you look in the Disney Lorcana trading card category, you will find us as well very easily. We will be posting about this on socials throughout the week, so you can find it easier there too. We are the Illumination Podcast over on Facebook as well. So you can find us pretty much anywhere you want to find us. And we do put this up as an audio podcast. It is a ton of fun. I recommend you check it out. We have a blast doing the set reviews. And again, it will come up probably middle of the week as a bonus episode as well. So we're talking biggest improvements for existing cards from Azurite Sea cards. So we will be talking about Azurite Sea cards, but we will be talking about them through the lens of how they're impacting the current cards that we have access to. So the focus will be much more on existing cards you are familiar with and a little bit more withdrawn on the cards from Azurite Sea. Of course, they're going to heavily impact the conversation, so we'll be going over them. I want to give a brief disclaimer before we jump into it, though. We're not going to make vague comments. We're going to try to stay away from that. We wanted to give you some specific examples of cards we think are big winners from Azurite Sea. We didn't want to talk about just kind of general cards. Like, we know if a card says discard on it, there's a chance Prince John might get better. We know that if more locations come out, Jim Hawkins might get better. We are fully aware of all of those kinds of things. We wanted to keep it to more than that, so that way you're not shouting at the podcast angrily. So there's your rationale if it falls into that category. We might miss something, of course. So the first card we want to talk about from Azurite Sea that's going to have an impact on some cards is Oswald. Sam, do you want to tell us about Oswald? And we'll talk about then the cards that Oswald will make an impact on.
Sure. So Oswald is a Sapphire legendary card. It is a 2/1/2 for 2 uninkable. And during your turn, whenever a card is put into your inkwell, you may reveal the top card of your deck. If it's an item card, you may play that item for free and it enters play exerted. Otherwise, you put it on the bottom of your deck.
So we know this is already going to pair well with some cards, right? Like the first card probably you're thinking of at home, and Sam's making eyebrows at me to say is
Lucky Dime
is going to be a big one. I don't think that's much of a winner. That card's already insane. I don't think it really won too much. I think Oswald is going to benefit other cards, and this is shout out to Hyper Hippo Time because he also kind of put these cards on the radar for the podcast. I agree with what he said here. Shield of Virtue, be able to re-ready things if we hit them. Poisoned Apple and Sword of Truth, all really good hits for this particular card. Sword of Truth lets you banish a hero character. Poisoned Apple lets you banish a princess character. These are first chapter items that kind of nobody's been playing, but get better because you have to run a heavy density of items in order for Oswald to really be effective. I don't know as though we're going to see it slotted into the quote-unquote standard style Ruby Sapphire decks. I think we're going to see a new version, something closer to what Moyam was playing towards the middle of this particular set, which is much more interested in things like the legendary Blue Queen Diviner, things like that. But I think that these cards get a pretty nice little boost from Oswald. Sam, do you have anything to add to that?
What's the card that you can exert it to give a character +1 lore?
Eye of the Fates.
Yes, I think that card will be really good with Oswald as well.
I think a lot of items are going to get improvement. I do think a streamlined strategy is a good idea. So a lot of call outs from Oswald. I think a lot of big winners of fringy cards that maybe we saw play for a minute or in certain lists saw play or ones that you've kind of just had in the back of your mind. I think Oswald helps a lot of those items become very playable. Next card I want to talk about is Robin Hood Sharpshooter. So Robin Hood Sharpshooter, we're all familiar with. We've seen decks with Robin Hood Sharpshooter, particularly green-red decks at this point. Sam, do you want to tell us Robin Hood real quick? I'm sure you looked it up over there.
Robin Hood Sharpshooter is a ruby card that is a 1/4/2 for uninkable. And whenever this character quests, look at the top 4 cards of your deck. You may reveal an action card with cost 6 or less and play it for free. Put the rest into your discard.
Right. These are cards, and I'll stop torturing you, making you read all the cards. This card we are pretty familiar with from the green-red decks. I know Specimen was championing this archetype for a little while, and I think some people are finding fondness with it because it plays some cool cards you don't get to normally play. There are two new cards that really help this out. One is Raya. We're getting our first good Raya. This is the Kumandrin Rider. She is a 4-cost inkable card. I believe she is a 3/3/2 as her stat line, and she has the ability whenever you ink a card, you get to ready a character. They cannot quest for the rest of the turn, however. The reason I think this is good with Robin Hood is because you want to protect Robin Hood. That's the biggest problem with Robin Hood is his ability is when he quests, and then he's staying on the field exerted. That makes him very vulnerable to being challenged. Raya helps you get Robin Hood back into a position where he's a little bit more protected, which I think is very, very important. A similar effect can be found on the red card coming out in this set. It is John Silver, Ferocious Friend. So a little bit worse in that you have to deal damage to the character in order to ready it, but I still think that that effect is also quite good. And having redundant copies, you may find that you want a couple of more versions of this card to be able to do it. It might just be as simple as we just play LeFoe instead as like copy 5 and 6 over Raya and John Silver, but I don't know if that's important. I just think that Robin Hood gets some benefit from in-color characters that can help prevent him from being left exerted on the board. Next up, speaking of John Silvers, I think John Silver Greedy Treasure Seeker gets a big bump in this particular set. There's one card in particular that I think really helps this card, because obviously this John Silver is a pirate. I'm more interested in the location part, because that's how we win the game, less so than the type line of being a pirate. I think the other card is a pirate by chance. I think that card is Minnie Mouse, Pirate Lookout. This card, when you would ink, I believe, she's a 3/2/1 for 3, and she lets you get a location back from your discard pot.
It is whenever you put a card into your inkwell.
Okay, so when you ink, we're seeing a lot of when you ink effects in this set. That is a theme that runs through it. I think Minnie Mouse being able to get back locations after a lot of players have changed the shape of the game and the way they're playing to deal with a card. I think having the ability to just simply get it back through taking a game action you're going to be taking normally is very, very powerful. So Minnie being able to bring back locations, John Silver can continue to quest and get big resist numbers. It just makes the whole situation very difficult. We'll talk more about different decks and archetypes as we proceed.
Something that's good about these ones during your turn when you ink effects is that it can happen that turn.
Next card that is getting a big boost. I personally do not support this. I just want to put it out there before we get there. Next card getting a big boost is Starlight Vial, is finding its way into a lot of conversations lately. Starlight Vial is an item that lets the next action you play cost 2 ink less. A lot of people are using this or considering this as a way to ramp out the 7-drop action Bend to My Will, which is a 7-cost action that has each opponent discard their hand, all of it, every card in it. So use this in tandem with some blue ramp ideally, and you're able to cast this very far ahead of schedule. The reason I personally don't like this is I think it's a little bit too all in, and you're gonna be left with like between 2 and 4 cards in your hand, 4 on the very, very upside, if everything goes right for you. 2 in most likely scenarios, so you're 2 against 0. You're not too far up on cards, and chances are they've committed a little bit more aggressively to the board in a meaningful way than you have. So you're much more ink positive, most likely, but you're probably going to be actual threat light versus what they're going to have on board. So then you are hoping to have like something like Under the Sea. It feels like it has to be too perfect for you to get all of these things to line up the way you want them to. But Starlight Vial is definitely going from absolutely being buried and having dust and cobwebs on it to people have blown that off and are looking at it again. So big win for Starlight Vial. 2 cards I think get a big bump from the next card, and that is Simba Future King, the 1-drop Steel Simba, and Simba Protective Cub, the 2-drop Amber Simba from Chapter 1, both getting a significant boost by way of Simba Pride Protector.
This one I'll read.
Please.
Simba Pride Protector is a 4/4/2 for 5 uninkable, and it has Shift 3, has the ability of Understand the Balance. At the end of your turn, if this character is exerted, you may ready your other character.
So this card obviously is quite good as a shift in an aggressive shell. It lets you ready all of your other characters. Really exciting. Makes, as we just discussed with the little synergies with Robin Hood, this Simba also can do that and makes it very, very powerful. So I think that this is is going to be a big boon. It also costs 5, which means that it can sing songs if that's applicable. So something like a Pride Lands aggro style deck in Amber Steel can still sing A Whole New World or another song if need be, because Simba can do that so effectively. And the shift line is nice. It's a good shift line. I think that this card, a lot of people are going to be testing with, and I think it's a card to definitely have on your mind as we begin the format. So I wanted to make sure I called that out. We've been waiting for the shift Simba. We got one last set. It was okay, but not super played, maybe one or two copies. And it is, I think, by far the more powerful. Obviously, we're talking about an uncommon versus a legendary. So big ups for Simba in that particular archetype. So now we're talking less about cards and more decks or strategies that have gotten some big improvements from new cards, potentially. We could be very wrong here, right? Like, it's worth testing. These are things that stand out in my mind and in Sam's mind as some things that might be pretty darn good. First off, I think Blurple's getting a couple of tools. First one is Madam Mim, Truly Marvelous, and she is a character that lets you pay 2 ink and discard a card to gain 1 lore. So her stat line is kind of, she's uninkable 3-drop. It's like a 2-3-1, I think. So her stat line's pretty miserable, but her effect for Blurple is very good, because a lot of times in Blurple, you have a bunch of ramp cards that maybe you don't want to play out, like some extra Mickey Mouse detectives, and you often have a lot of ink because you spent the first several turns ramping. So I think that this card is pretty darn good at helping you close out a game or explode out of nowhere as extra copies of like a Merlin Goat for this particular deck.
Yeah, and there's not like a limit on how many times you can do it. So late game, if you have 4 cards and 8 ink, you just gain 4, win the game.
You can absolutely do that. Very powerful card to call out for Blurple. I think of the purple decks, Blurple probably has the best use for this particular card, but it may end up finding a home somewhere else. I don't know. The other card to call out is Hades, Lord of the Dead. Blurple tends to want to close the game out because it doesn't have the most robust options. It can't deal with similarly wide boards. So with Blurple, you tend to want to be the front-footed deck in the format. Hades lets you do that and punishes your opponent from challenging your character. Basically, let's leave them there so they can all quest, or you can start to take out my other characters, but I'm going to gain lore if you do. And Hades' stat line is pretty absurd at 3-4-3 for 6 uninkable. It's an attractive looking card for the purple decks, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree.
Baymax is pretty sick.
We did see with our preliminary testing, we saw Baymax do some pretty crazy things.
Baymax quests hard. Stat line's decent. It's a little susceptible. Playing a 5-drop to have it brawled feels pretty bad.
But it does have that 6 butt, so it makes it hard to take care of, like Hiram.
Right. The steel removal just struggles to take care of it. So maybe something like Baymax as well. Great legendary card there that helps do exactly what Blurple wants to be doing. Challenge something with a fox and then quest with Baymax to take the damage off a fox. Feels pretty gross. Next up, archetype, I think, is getting some cool toys. Baja Blast, which is Sapphire Emerald, one that we've seen a lot of people try to make work at various points in time, but haven't been able to do so. Baja Blast gets 2 cards I wanted to call out. One, obviously, is the Bend to My Will. The point is you ramp on 2 with your Teepo or your Azurite Sea, 1 jump, whatever it is, and then you go into playing your Starlight Vial or Flamingo Iago, and then you go ahead the following turn and play the Bend to My Will. I think that is very thin, but I think a lot of people are going to be doing it. The real get, I think, for this strategy is going to end up being the Green Basil, Disguised Detective, who is our Floodborne green card. I think this card is very good. Whenever you ink, you get to pay 1 and you can have your opponent discard a card, and its stat line is actually like pretty good. I think it costs 6 and is inkable, right?
Yeah, it's just chosen opponent.
Oh, it's chosen. That's a different one. Okay. So 6 cost inkable for 5-2.
4-5-2.
Yeah, it's a good shift stat line. 4. Annoying to deal with. It can only be Zeus'd. Can't really be hit with red outside of ice block technology. So I really like that a lot. I think that's a good get for that deck, because keeping your opponent light on resources to get back into a game is really where you have to be in Baja Blast, because you can't deal with the board directly outside of Under the Sea. And Basil helps sing a good portion of that song. So pretty cool. Next, we've already kind of teased this one out a little bit, but I think that the big gets for this particular archetype being Red Steel, I think the big gets for this one is the aforementioned Minnie Mouse Pirate Lookout and Vanellope Gutsy Go-Getter. That's right. Another Vanellope von Schweetz, I think, is quite good. So Vanellope von Schweetz has an ability that if she starts off at a location at the beginning of your turn, you get to gain a lore and draw a card. And I think where this deck stumbles hard is in the category of card draw. So early on, we saw it in the set four meta. We saw a lot of people trying pirates with this particular archetype and realizing like the only card draw available to them is a whole new world. And that ended up being kind of a disaster because you gave your opponent too many resources to handle your locations. And then we saw Doc come into the fold at the Vegas DLC, where a red steel deck made a deep run into day two, which is awesome. And thing I want to point out about this deck, my little disclaimer, is you're going to be a pirate deck or you're going to be a location deck. Likely you're not going to be a pirate location deck. It's just asking too much of you. I think if you're going to go pirates, you get a cool new Smee that will help you be more controlling in mid-range. I think you're going to be able to eke out a lot of games that way. I think you're definitely going to play locations in your pirate deck, don't get me wrong, but I think the pirate part of it is going to be the predominant force versus the secondary location part. I think the red steel deck that I'm talking about more is the location style deck that we saw at Vegas that is simply adding mini to add redundancy so you can keep getting your removal back by way of getting back your seven dwarves mines, and adding Vanellope to help add an element of card draw into your deck that's consistent.
What about the Wreck-It Ralph with the location deck?
It's possible in a vacuum,
get it
by
back
itself.
And then banish it and get it back and just gain those extra lore.
By itself, Wreck-It Ralph looks like a heck of a card. So we'll see if it does find a home. It's just one that it's just a generically good card. So it doesn't have a home easily identifiable yet. The final deck that I think is getting the big ups is either your favorite or your least favorite, probably. And that's Ruby Sapphire, because I think Sailing the Azurite Sea is a very messed up card. I think that's a huge get for this deck. I think it's going to be extremely problematic because it's just gives you more inkables, gives you more card draw in the late game. When your ramp can just simply be draw a card in the very late game when you're digging for your pieces with your visions at all, I think that card just offers so much flexibility for a deck that was already very, very good. As good as that deck was, I think it's only going to get better. Do I think there are other tools that could go in it? Absolutely. I am not a proficient enough pilot of the deck. It's not my favorite. It's one I often play because I think it's often the best deck, but I'm not good enough to say what is or is not in there. But I will say that I think that this deck is going to be very, very interested in Sailing the Azurite Sea quite a bit. So I think that gets a very big win.
I agree with you.
Excellent. Green Purple is going to be an archetype that also gets a single card, but I think that the single card is going to be very good. Do I think there's other cards that could nestle into it? Of course, but time's going to tell. I think the big get for Green Purple or Green Steel, depending on how you configure the deck, is Go-Go Tamago. This card is extremely powerful, adding a Merlin's Goat-esque effect with the ability to end the game very proficiently at its floor. It's a 2-2 that is evasive and costs 2, so it can challenge Diablo and deal with problematic cards in the early game, as well as just simply be a win condition at the very end of the game. So I think this is some cool stuff. Two established archetypes getting some stuff, and I think some fringy archetypes might actually begin to cement themselves as format staples in Core Constructed. So I'm very excited to see what people do. That'll do it for the podcast. If you like this, we will be back at you, of course, with our set review this Sunday, November 10th at time of recording. So please do come give it a listen if you're available. Even if you throw it on and leave it in the background, that's tremendous help for us over on Twitch. If you are not able to make it live, we'll toss it up on the podcast as well so you can hear it. You won't be able to see it. We will be here. We'll be reviewing the cards and telling you what we think, how playable they are versus how not playable. That will be twitch.tv/supraliminalfilms. Supraliminal Films. Yes, I know. If you can spell it, you can find us. So check us out over there. But until then, I don't have a good segue, Sam, but you have to say the thing anyway.
Keep questing.